Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Just Cow in the City. This one being a little bit of an interim show again. Well, not a little bit. It is an interim show. I thought since everybody seemed to like 1981 in film, well, I thought today we would cover 1982 in film because it's super fun. So as I was going through it, I'm like, well, I don't know. Should we really do this? And then, I mean, I'm just going from month to month is how I do it. And I'm already seeing stuff that I remember so clearly and that's so stupid and funny that there's no reason not to do this. So I will just begin with a movie I can remember so clearly called The Seduction. I don't know if anybody remembers this film except me, and I've never even seen it. I only remember The Coming Attractions with Morgan Fairchild. And I remember she was like a news anchor and she's reading the teleprompter and the guy that's stalking her is like has something over the teleprompter. Do you remember this at all? Because it was pretty classic.
Good evening. I'm Jamie Douglas and this is the 6 o'clock news.
In the news tonight is the report of another jet airliner hijacked to Cuba. Also standing by with a live minicam report is KXLA reporter John Leakley at the site of a West Side supermarket where a gunman is holding at least 3 people hostage. And later in tonight's news, I'll have the first in a series of special reports on the sweetheart killer case that has been plaguing Los Angeles for the past 3 months. Jamie, I'm watching you. It's him. He's watching me.
What's going on?
He watches me all the time.
Go to commercial.
Yeah, I only remember I remember it so clearly. She's like watching. She's like, and coming up in the news today, I'm watching you, Jamie. And I was like, what? I mean, nobody remembers this film except me. And like I said, I only remember The Coming Attractions because it was that teleprompter scene because it's so stupid. Like, you know, like they can't catch the guy who's somehow infiltrated the teleprompter in 1982. It's not like today where you could do it from home. Obviously, the guy was in there doing something pretty stupid, and it was a pretty bad film, and I don't think it made a heck of a lot of money. And then that year, I remember Shoot the Moon was there, which is actually one of my favorite directors, Alan Parker. But I've tried to sit through this movie 100 times, and it is just dull. And it's Diane Keaton and Albert Finney and Karen Allen. Everybody loves them. And I just can't do it. It was a bomb. And it just, you know, it was supposed to be great. And Alan Parker's amazing. This is the guy that did Fame and Angel Heart and The Commitments. And it just blows. I don't know why. I wish it was better. So it kind of sucks. And then if you remember, Personal Best, like the first lesbian movie. Remember, it was like Mariel Hemingway. And the only reason, again, I remember that one is because they depicted it on SCTV with Andrea Martin and Catherine O'Hara. And they were making fun of the movie, and they had Hall & Oates on, and they were combining that one, and I guess Chariots of Fire must have been this year. And they were combining it, so they did the production of Chariots of Eggs. But it was the best that it was Andrea Martin and Catherine O'Hara and Hall & Oates in an, you know, a egg race where you have to carry the egg on your spoon, Chariots of Eggs. But what's better than, for some reason, the movie Personal Best that has to do with Hall & Oates? I mean, really?
All right. Okay, we're back with the stars of Chariots of Eggs, Daryl Hall and John Oates, and comedian-turned-director Bobby Bedman. Guys, I just want to ask you this. Daryl, John, why the sudden switch from music to acting? I mean, why did you do this picture?
Well, basically, we just loved Bobby's script. I mean, it was fantastic. And it not only that, it deals with 3 things that are really important, I know, to me, and I think John, too. And it's personal goals and the freedom to pursue those goals and chicks. Yeah. For me, it's chicks. I mean, listen.
All right.
Well, Sammy, if I may, you say something about this clip we're about to see. You know, it's a period piece, which was a marvelous thing for me from a director's standpoint. But the story deals with two runners who are training for the big race. And the marvelous thing is they're racing against women.
Bobby, if I may just add something here.
Certainly.
You know, it is a marvelous twist to the story because I don't think that the women are really interested in the men.
Yeah, you know, they're,
lesbians? And I mean that in the good sense. I do. No letters. Oh, you're going to get a lot now. You know.
Okay. All right, why don't we take a look at that clip right now? Okay. This is Chariots of Eggs with Daryl Hall and John Oates, and it's a new film by Bobby Bittman. Let's take a look at it right now.
If the FCTV isn't just the greatest, and also that year, that same year, Das Boot, remember that came out? It was like a German movie, like an independent, well, it wasn't an independent film, but it came from like a foreign film. Back then, nobody was watching, you know, they were very rare when they hit, but it made a lot of money, and SCTV, again, this is why I can remember everything, made fun of it because they called it Das Boobs. everybody had big boobs in the movie. That's the only reason I remember. I never wanted to see that movie, but it made like $84 million, which for a foreign film back then is incredible. Swamp Thing with Adrian Barbeau. That was just absolutely awful. But again, if you're the right age, which I was, then, you know, it's kind of Adrian Barbeau. What is she doing? And I mean, as the woman from Maud doing anything, it's insane. But it was directed, it was written and directed by Wes Craven. And I mean, you know, he was right there. This is the guy that bought us the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. So he had a good plan. I'm not sure why he's... The second one was better because it has Heather Locklear. I prefer the blondes. You know what I'm talking about, right? There was something called I'm Dancing as Fast as I Can, which I could have sworn was a ballet dancer addicted to pills. But because I thought there was a book, but what was her name? Gelsey Kirkland or something like that. And I know they made this movie, but it was with Jill Clayburgh. And, you know, again, we always talk about her like when she was so popular and then she just went downhill so fast. And if you watch her movies, you're just like, how was she a star? I can never figure that out. Meanwhile, this is Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip. Absolute classic. Now, I did not care for this movie. It's a stand-up comedy one. This is the one where he, you know, legendarily caught on fire from doing too much coke. And, you know, this is a stand-up special that was technically legendary because he talked about it. And it was kind of the way Chris Rock, after the Oscars, did the Netflix special, then talking about, which wasn't as effective as, you know, we wanted it to be. But it was the exact same thing. That Richard Pryor, everybody in the news knew he caught on fire from doing too much crack or whatever it was, and he lit himself on fire. And you got to wait till the end of the movie for him to be like, I know some of you are making fun of me. I know some of you like this one. And he lights a match. He goes, what's this? Richard Pryor running down the street. And that's the end, right? So he saves it all the way to the end, knowing full well that's what you're there to see, just like Chris Rock did with his special and that stupid Will Smith shit. But God, I remember seeing that in the drive-in movie.
I want to say y'all gave me a lot of love when I was not feeling well, and y'all really, I appreciate it. Also, y'all did some, applaud yourself. Also, y'all did some nasty-ass jokes on my ass, too. Oh, yeah, y'all didn't think I saw some of these motherfuckers, since you love me so much. I remember this one, it's straight to match like this.
think, what's that? Richard Pryor running down the street.
And I was so bored. And then he went into this character, Mudball, or I think that was his name, Mudball. And I'm like, I don't know what is happening now. I just remember sitting there as a kid and going like, what is happening? Man, Mudball, we're crazy. And I'm like, I don't understand. Why is everybody laughing? And recently, I have found out that in The Breakfast Club, when Anthony Michael Hall is doing, I think it's in The Breakfast Club. It's definitely a Weird Science. I think it's one or the other or both. Anthony Michael Hall does kind of a black, an old black blues imitation. He's imitating a black guy, which right now he'd probably be canceled. But there's scenes in either or, and I can't remember. And apparently what I have now heard in doing this research of John Hughes and all that is that he's doing Mudball. If I have that name correct, Mudball, that Richard Pryor used to do, some guy, Mudball. I'll never forget sitting there watching and going like, what is happening? I have no idea what's happening.
What? Do what? All right, this is the last time Mudbone will be seen anyway. This is Mudbone's last show. Right, this is Mudbone. And ladies and gentlemen, from Tupelo, Mississippi, Mudbone. Now, I know that boy. See, he fucked up. See, that fire got on his ass. And it fucked him up upstairs. Fried up what little brains he had.
One of my favorite movies, really of all time, Death Trap. Michael Caine, Christopher Reeve, Diane Cannon. So good. Based on the play, which I never saw in the city and I wish I had. But the movie's fantastic. Obviously, I was going to see anything Christopher Reeve was in. But this is a really good movie. And quite frankly, I was obsessed with the soundtrack alone, which I couldn't find anywhere back then. It just had the harpsichord music, which I really liked so much. And it was such a good movie with twists and turns and Michael Caine and Christopher Reeve were Michael Caine. I mean, he was incredible. It was such a good movie, and the premise was really interesting. And I've seen it multiple times. And, you know, when you take a Broadway play and you make it into a movie, it's so rare when it works. But I really like that movie. I don't know whether it did very well, but it certainly is good. And then another one which was really amazing, Victor Victoria, the follow-up to me and my friend Lawrence's favorite movie, SOB, kind of with the great Robert Preston, the rediscovery of Robert Preston, you know, the music man. He's incredible in this. Alex Karras is amazing in this movie. This is Julie Andrews and James Garner, and it's so good. It's about, what is the premise? It's a woman pretending to be a man to pretending to be a woman. Like 1920s France, when those kind of gender things were fun. Like not drag, but just kind of, I don't know, men imitating women, women, whatever the case may be. And it's a fun movie. Blake Edwards, like maybe his last decent one. So he made two really good movies that I know I really enjoyed, that SOB first, and then Victor Victoria, which is so entertaining. I haven't seen it in years. I wonder if it holds up. I bet it does. There's also stupid stuff in it. The guy can't help himself, Blake Edwards, I'm talking about. There's a whole bunch of Pink Panther kind of shit in it, which I never liked. But the rest of it, you really just watch it for Robert Preston. He's so incredible. I do lines from him all the time. Just playing the gay sidekick. I mean, I know it sounds funny, but the perfect part for me. Like I remember he gets to her hotel and she's like, where are we going? Up. just the little lines and his vigor for life in this movie, it's so good. And then I think he had one more after him and he died, and it's such a bummer because I was just kind of getting to rediscover him after Music Man and things like that. He wasn't in enough stuff, but we got lucky that Blake Edwards and Julie Andrews, since they were husband and wife, seemed to like him and use him in all the movies. I wonder if he'd stayed alive, if Blake Edwards would have made better movies. Then, of course, the worst thing that could ever happen to movie making, Porky's. I mean, I talk about this in class all the time. I mean, it made over $100 million. I mean, it's the worst thing that happened. It ruined, or you look at it the other way, the 80s. It ruined it or made the 80s what they were. I'll never forget being in school, in high school, and people just going crazy over Porky's. Have you seen Porky's? Have you seen Porky's? And then I'll never forget going to see Porky's and then being right out of Annie Hall. I always thought my classmates were idiots. You know, Melvin grew stuffing his fat little face. I mean, that's when I realized I wasn't a bright man, but I had to have been smarter than all these fucking idiots in my high school that were worshiping Porky's. When you sit there and you realize that Annie Hall is a masterpiece and your friends, not my close friends, are worshiping Porky's. I'm talking about, these are the people in your homeroom that you get stuck with, not your friends, that loved Porky's. Oh, even as a kid, the perfect age, the age they made it for, I was like, this has got to be a joke. Life has got to be better than Porky's. It makes me upset to this day. And it was so funny when I'm talking about it in the class, and the class is like, Professor, should we watch Porky's? No, that is not the point of this story. Like, I can't even show that to them as a joke. Porky's. And then what I could show them is Porky's 3. And the funny thing is, the theme song from Porky's 3, I've been playing on Spotify. It's from Dave Evans. I like it. But don't tell anybody. How many of you remember, as we go into further into 1982, Cat People, which is not a great movie. I've seen it before because, what was it, Natasha Kinski, I think her name is, really pretty. So, you know, obviously I watched it, but it's so not great. And it, like, her brother wants to have sex with her. I think it's Malcolm McDowell. I think I have that movie correct because I get mixed up, and there's Cat People and there's Wolf movies, and it's confusing, but there's a David Bowie song to it that was good. This guy, David Bowie, could make anything good. All right, here's an issue. Diner. Everybody loves Diner. Barry Levinson, the guy who's going to win an Oscar 6 years down the road. I've never seen it. I know, I feel horrible. I've never seen it. Everybody seems to love it. What is it, Kevin Bacon? Paul Reiser, sorry, Steve Guttenberg. Steve Guttenberg, I mean, that guy, how many movies was that guy in the 80s? He was a movie star, but he stinks. And Mickey Rourke, of course. And I've never seen it, and I just don't care, and it just looks dull to me. and everybody gets angry. It's one of those ones people get angry about. If I never saw it, I don't know why. The only thing I can remember it, I just remember people telling me about Paul Riley. I guess I reminded them because I know he was just, are you going to eat that? Are you going to eat that? Why don't you just order your own? So I know things about it. But yeah, I never saw it. But I do know there was a TV pilot for it, and it didn't work, and James Spader's in it. So I know that. And I also remember Richard Pryor in another movie called Some Kind of Hero, which, again, didn't do well, and maybe it should have, but Richard Pryor was just on a major decline. He's a returning Vietnam vet, and he was having trouble adjusting to civilian life, so it's funny, but not really funny, and it just, I think people just didn't know what to think. I wonder if that's the one my friend Lawrence told me. There was like one funny scene where he had seen a robbery and something, but it's, yeah, it didn't. It made some money because it's Richard Pryor, but so that's two movies for him in that year. I mean, obviously his stand-up special was incredible. So if you can make a kind of a drama and a comedy special, I guess, I mean, he was the shit at that time. Just he's kind of on his way down at that time, unfortunately. Now, also at that time, and I know this because I'm writing this book on John Hughes, there's National Lampoon's Movie Madness, and that was their idea to get back to try and make another Animal House. They were really, really trying to do it, and it's just absolutely awful, and it even stars Peter Riegert from Animal House. I mean, they tried, and people are just... people hated it, and it was bad, and it really almost, like, ruined them. I mean, it was, like, one of the most horrible things ever that almost ruined the magazine. It was so bad. They were trying so hard to recapture the Animal House magic. They eventually get there the next year with Vacation, but it's a long time in coming. And this is the year that Conan the Barbarian comes out, which is a big deal for Schwarzenegger. It makes a lot of money. I never saw that one. I saw the second one because I just don't usually like that kind of stuff. But I can't. I remember how much I enjoyed the second one, Conan the Destroyer. But Conan the Barbarian made an unexpected amount of money, and of course led Arnold Schwarzenegger into this incredible stratosphere. You know, not yet, but on his way. And it was and Oliver Stone is credited for writing it because he was just a young. It was started in the 70s. They wanted to make it like after Star Wars. So I'm not exactly sure what took so long. But yeah, he was involved with the writing for it. And they found Arnold Schwarzenegger through the film Pumping Iron in the 70s. Like, I mean, that's how long it took to put together. And then go figure, it actually worked out really well that it made a lot of money. And then, of course, everybody's favorite film, Annie. I remember seeing this in the movies. I remember I got in trouble. I never, ever cut school. The only thing I ever had going for me was my attendance. So I always made it a plan never to cut school. But one day, I fucking hated this one teacher. I'm like, I'm not going to class. And I remember I went to see Annie because I guess that was all that was playing that day. Clearly came out in May of 82 where I was just like, fuck this. I'm going to college. I'm already in. What am I going to go to class for, right? I went to see Annie. Annie. Oh, that movie blows. You know what's better? The Black Annie that came out with Jamie Foxx and Cameron Diaz. It's better than this 1982 Annie. I couldn't stand Carol Burnett at this time. You know, I always worshipped her growing up, but then she just became really overrated, and I hated her. That girl was annoying. I mean, Albert Finney is incredible as always, but that movie sucked, and except for, of course, everybody's favorite song, which now they put in kids' productions. Dumb dog, what are you doing around here? They added that for the movie, and you know, that song sucks. And that's what makes it kind of awesome, that it does suck. And it's such a horrible movie, except for Punjab, of course. He's incredible. No, it's bad. What is that? Who else is in that? That Broadway, Bernadette Peters. And was it Terrence? I can't remember who the hell else is in it. All I know is it sucks. I've tried to watch it again. It still sucks. And I mean, I love that musical. So you're talking about movies that don't sometimes transfer, like Death Trap. I never saw the play, but the movie really works. And Annie, the movie just, I mean, I guess some people like it. I can't stand it. Everything about it sucks. And I love that play. I mean, I love that musical. I saw it on Broadway when it was originally there. Obviously, we love, my sister and I worship Andrea McCardle. We actually went to go see her at 54 Below. She touched my shoulder. It was very exciting. But that movie blows. And then there's Dead Man Don't Wear Plaid, which was an interesting movie. I didn't like it. I don't like those kind of movies. It bored the shit out of me. I didn't like old films. That's Steve Martin and Carl Reiner coming together again from The Jerk. They had a really good relationship for a long time. Those movies just weren't working for me. I mean, I appreciate it more now when they were trying to, you know, when we know about the way technology can work now, like Forrest Gump. But before they were doing that, they tried to put Steve Martin into these old films that I just didn't care about. It was a great experiment, and I just wasn't interested, but I know people really liked it a lot. And then, interestingly, there's a foreign film, a Scottish film, called Gregory's Girl. I might have told you about this because I saw it, and I was explaining the premise to you, how I can't believe they haven't kind of remade this. Now, I remember when this came out, I didn't know what it was, and for some reason, this is the movie I chose to watch when I was going over 1982. I'm like, because the premise sounded incredible, and you can barely understand anything they're saying, but it's a guy, Gregory, and there's a soccer, and he's on a soccer team, and a girl joins the soccer team, and everybody gets enamored with the girl. So then, of course, I'm going to watch a movie like that because that's hilarious, and everybody's asking around. And this guy finally asks her out, and what she decides to do, since she knows that everybody's asking around, is she puts this guy through a bunch of tests, and she, even though he's supposed to go out with her, she has him meet four of her other friends, like one at a time. So one girl picks him up, and she's like, where's the other girl? And she's like, oh, don't worry, we're going to meet her. And then they go to meet another friend. She's testing him. And that's such a great... So when I saw that premise... Now, the movie's weird, and I don't think it does justice to its premise, but that's a great premise for a teen movie nowadays, where a girl puts this guy through a test and tests her friends, tests this guy and his... You know, is he a nice guy or what's he like? And find out through her friends. Great idea. You know, if you make it nice and not weird, you know, maybe you'd have to set it in the 80s so things just wouldn't be awkward because everything just sucks now. But yeah, what an interesting movie that was. I can't say I recommend it because it's a little weird and it's foreign, so it didn't cost a lot of money, didn't make a lot of money, but you know, whatever. Meanwhile, right in the blockbuster area of May, Rocky III comes out. And we all know that you can't even believe that whatever you call the third one, the part of the trilogy, we didn't even know there was going to be a Rocky IV, makes $300 million back in 1982, Rocky III. Because you're figuring, Rocky was amazing. We love the first Rocky. Rocky II, you were just getting more of the same. Nobody doesn't like Rocky II. It's just, whatever. So the odds of Rocky III working, Stallone writing and directing, and it's just becoming awesome and introducing Mr. T. And when you watch it, you're like, this is stupid, and yet I cannot take my eyes away from this. It still totally works. It's incredible. Rocky III and Rocky IV is even like more amazing. I mean, this Sylvester Stallone, I talk about him all the time. He's so incredible that he is, you know, just he's two iconic American characters. And the fact that you can make a Rocky III and IV and they're technically known as being just as good, it may be in a different way, but they made even more money than the first ones. It's really a miracle.
Get out while you can. Don't get a sucker no statue. Give him guts. I told you I wasn't going away. You got your shot. Now give me mine.
Why'd you get the hell out of there?
Shut up, old man. I ain't going nowhere. And why don't you tell all these nice folks why you've been ducking me? Politics, man. This country wants to keep me down. Keep everybody weak. They don't want a man like me to have the title because I'm not a puppet like that fool up there.
You know, you've got a big mouth, you know?
Why don't you come out and close it, bad boy? Come on. Yeah, come on.
You're tired, dog. The guy's crazy. Don't listen to him.
The little man don't want to come to me. Then I'll come to you people and lay out the truth. I am ranked number one. One! That means I'm the best. But this bum been taking the easy matches, fighting other bums. I'm telling you and everybody here, I'll fight him anywhere, anytime, for nothing.
Fight him, fight
him! But you people ain't never gonna see that happen because he's gonna retire. You see, he don't fight no real man. He fight them setups.
What? You're a disgrace to this sport.
Hey, woman. Hey, woman. Listen here. Since your old man ain't got no heart, maybe you'd like to see a real man. I bet you stay up late every night dreaming you had a real man, don't you? I tell you what, bring your pretty little self over to my apartment tonight, and I'll show you a real man.
You want it? You got it! You got it!
And here, of course, is a movie that sucks, a little thing called Hanky Panky. Remember we were saying that Richard Pryor, even though he was, his stand-up comedy was working, but his movie career was kind of on the way out. Gene Wilder was in the same boat, and he does this movie with his, I guess, girlfriend at the time. I think it was girlfriend, and then they met Gilda Radner, I'm talking about. And then I guess they either get married, or that might have been her last movie together. I can't remember. No, I think Haunted Honeymoon might be the last, but maybe they meet on this and they fall in love, but boy, is it a really shitty fucking movie, which means, you know, it was just the end of Gene Wilder's incredible career. It maybe made one more with him and Richard Pryor that made a little bit of money. Otherwise, yeah, it was way over. It's just so crazy that a guy that kind of helped completely write Young Frankenstein and was involved with Blazing Saddles that just couldn't come up with another plan after that. It was just, and he was so delightful and it just wasn't working. I don't know. Maybe he got too full of himself. And meanwhile, that year Poltergeist came out. I remember, I don't like scary movies that much. I'm afraid of them. And I was trying to go see it because it looked so entertaining. It was a Spielberg kind of film. And I remember I saw it at Movie City 5 in Woodbridge, New Jersey. And I was there with my prom date, Gina Cristofaro. And we couldn't decide, should we go in? Should we not go in? And we ended up going in. And boy, did that movie rule. That movie was so good and so entertaining. And it's such a fascinating story. Who's the guy that directed it? Tobe Hooper, I think. And it's technically, as anyone, if you read about it, could tell you, Tobe Hooper was a mess. I think, wasn't that the guy who did Texas Chainsaw? Do I have that wrong? I may have that wrong. That something was wrong with it. And Spielberg was basically directing the film. That's what they all say. Joe Beth Williams and Craig D. Nelson. They're like, technically Spielberg was directing it. And that's what makes it so good. And this guy just was so angry. He's like, wait, are you going to let me direct this? Or what's happening here? So it's funny that there was so many back problems with the movie. And it still turned out incredible. Really incredible. A really great, good scare, good premise. Somebody told me that they're like, somebody told me, I was at somebody's house, like, this house is buried over, it was an old graveyard. I'm like, what are you, out of your fucking mind? You never saw Poltergeist? I bet you that happens more than you'd think. And then, of course, Star Trek II comes out. I mean, this June of 1982, it's sick. It's, Poltergeist, Star Trek II, which was incredible. I saw all these in the movie theater. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, everyone knows. They talk about it on Seinfeld. But we all know that the return of Ricardo Montalban and then his career after that was incredible. Like, he was what a comeback for the guy after years of Fantasy Island and all that stuff. Star Trek II is incredible. Nicholas Meyer wrote and directed it. The guy comes out of nowhere. I mean, I loved him because he did Time After Time, The 7% Solution. And all of a sudden, this guy's never seen a Star Trek episode, and he directs the greatest Star Trek movie ever. Nothing ever. I mean, I love Star Trek IV, but Star Trek II is incredible and sets the franchise where they're making, just like Star Wars, making movies to this day and TV shows, and it's all because of Wrath of Khan, because we know the first Star Trek movie in 1979 did okay, but nobody liked it. So they gave it another shot, and boy, did they get it right. Kirstie Alley is amazing in this. Kirstie Alley is amazing playing a half Romulan, half Vulcan, and then when they replaced her with that other horrible girl, Robin Curtis, she couldn't handle it. It was very, very impressive, but of course, Kirstie Alley for the next movie asked for more money than William Shatner, so they're like, yeah, take a hike, jerk off, and she was never seen again. I joke, of course, because then she made a career of herself in Cheers, which is incredible, too. But Star Trek II is amazing. I probably know all the lines. Also, I don't know whether you know, but in Star Trek II, there's a scene where they're looking online. They're looking on the ship for the Genesis machine. What is the Genesis machine? That's the whole point of the thing. The Genesis machine is this thing that can kind of take a dead planet and give life to it, truly Genesis. And they're looking up the stuff. And the computer image, the images they have in this scene for this little two-minute scene were how Pixar started. This little thing was done by a couple of the guys at Pixar, and this little scene in Star Trek II makes all those Pixar movies your kids watch or that become so popular. Star Trek II starts the entire Pixar, you know, run of incredibleness and how they started dealing with computer animation, all from this one little scene in Star Trek II. Now, right after that, the next week, E.T. comes out. That's why it's still incredible that Star Trek was able to make money. E.T. comes out, makes $1 billion. I saw it in the theater, I think the day after the prom. The prom was horrible. I just wanted to die. I'm sure everybody has a lot of the same stories. And I remember seeing that movie that day. And of course, enjoying it. But I remember like maybe seeing it one more time. It was really good, but something, maybe just the way I saw it, you know, in that mindset bothered me. But obviously, we don't have to talk about it. We know what happened with that. And it's just kind of funny that that kid, that Drew Barrymore, became an international superstar, little Gertie from E.T., and the kid who was in the lead, who was incredible, who they're saying, nobody's seen a kid act like this ever in the history of film, the guy who played Elliot, and then he was never heard from again. It's pretty bad. And ironically, the same day that E.T. came out, Grease 2 came out. Grease 2.
Come on, everybody, gather round. I'm going to show you how to knock them down. When I'm on the ball, I'm the number one. And I'm going to show you how it's done.
With the beautiful Michelle Pfeiffer, which is why sometimes I do turn it on, because she's so stunningly gorgeous, is, I think, the only movie I have ever walked out on. I guess I was with some friends, and we just walked out. It was that bad. And I never even felt bad about it, like leaving. It was that horrible. I mean, it really is bad. Everything about it is bad. The fact that For some reason, Liza Minnelli's sister is one of the pink ladies. What? Liza Minnelli's sister? Lorna Luft? I mean, this movie blows. You can consider it, I guess, a cult classic now, but it is still unwatchable. And then, of course, the next week after that, one of my favorite movies comes out, but it's awful. It's called Author, Author. Only me, my sister, and Artie Lang know about it. We're the only ones that love the movie. It's with Al Pacino and Tuesday Weld and Diane Cannon. And he just has a bunch of kids. And I loved it. It was on cable all the time. And I love it. I don't know. I'll always love it. I don't know why. Who's the comedian I love? Alan King. Alan King is in it, too. He plays his agent. He's a playwright. I think about this movie all the time. It's all about the theater in New York. And he's got this great place. And Diane Cannon's really sexy. And there's just something about it. But I can remember lines from it. The kids were funny. I mean, the other day, I think I just said, in fact, I think I said it on the podcast. I said, you woke me up, damn it. That's right, because the earthquake woke me up. I said, you woke me up, damn it. Well, that is a line from Author, Author that this kid Geraldo says. And so think about that. I just said that out of nowhere, and it's from the fucking movie from 1982, Author, Author. You got to be kidding me. Blade Runner also come out that week. Now, I've never seen it. It just looked unbelievably boring for me. That is one I've got to see. I know it didn't do very well. It was supposed to be good. Obviously, they've made a sequel, and it's been like a cult thing since then, but I need to see it. And I apologize for those of you who are like, what? But I did see The Thing, which was John Carpenter's movie that year with Kurt Russell. And I really enjoyed that. That's a really good movie. Anybody that likes that kind of horror and John Carpenter loves The Thing. It was kind of a gutsy movie because it's not your normal, you know, horror. I mean, I guess it is in a way, but it's just like five people in a location in Alaska with a creature around. It was very entertaining for something that really shouldn't be entertaining. It's kitsch, I guess, but it is a classic at this point. And then that summer, Tron comes out from Disney with Lacey Underall from Caddyshack for some reason, and Jeff Bridges, Oscar winner Jeff Bridges. And of course, I saw that. It was so boring. But how are you not going to see a guy that gets trapped in a computer game in 1982? It was so exciting. Meanwhile, that video game, Tron, I almost might get it from my apartment because I worshipped it, because it had four different games to it and the joystick was incredible. And so I like that better than the movie. Nobody liked the movie, although they did a sequel. I think Jeff Bridges even did it because he's like, really? You want to do a second one? Because, well, no, we can make it better now. So it's not very good. And of course, has the greatest villain ever. Was that David Warner, the guy who's the villain of the in Titanic and so many other, guy can't help it Time After Time. So he was like the Alan Rickman of his day. But that movie wasn't good. Woody Allen's movie that year was A Midsummer Night Sex Comedy, which I did not like. I just did not like him and I think Julie Haggard. That's the first one, I think, with Mia Farrow. Was it Jose Ferraro's in it? And Tony Roberts was in it too, so I was happy about that. But yeah, I didn't like it. I mean, maybe I should give it another try, but I get the feeling in my mind, I think about it sometimes, and I didn't like it. That's the six pack came out with Kenny Rogers, which, you know, everybody loved. No, it was a crappy movie, but you know he did have the hit song. What is it? Turn your love, or turn your. Well, I got it here.
Right when a man's doing all that he planned, when he thinks he's got just what he needs, life will deliver a shot that will shiver him, driving him down to his knees, make him start giving. Living again. Well, it's your mind that tricks you into leaving every time. Love will turn you around, turn you around.
you know, if you're gonna have Kenny Rogers make a movie, hey, Kenny, just at least give us something, you know, for the soundtrack. Anything with kids. I'm surprised I don't like that one as much as I like Arthur. What's the matter with me? And then I remember Young Doctors in Love came out. I think it was a Gary Marshall movie. They were trying to make it like Airplane. It's Michael McKean. And I remember hating it. Gary Marshall really sucked as a director. He got lucky a couple times. But this guy, you know, made some of the greatest television I'd ever seen in my life, in the fact of Dick Van Dyke and The Odd Couple and Happy Days and stuff that I worship. But when he became a movie director, now, it wasn't working for me at all. I didn't like Young Doctors in Love. I didn't like half of his movies. You know, obviously he got very lucky with Pretty Woman, but, you know, and I always make fun of him for those horrible New Year's Eve and Mother's Day movie, Valentine's Day, all those horrible movies. The movie did okay, but I remember hating it, just really not liking it, and rooting for Lenny from Laverne and Shirley, but not enjoying it at all. You know, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas also came out that summer with Burt Reynolds and Dolly Parton, and based on the play, and I never went to see it, and I couldn't care less, but it made a lot of money, and that was like when, but that's when Burt Reynolds was still technically a movie star, and I think it ends right here. You know, he had all the Smoking the Bandits, then even Cannonball Run made a lot of money because of Burt Reynolds, and then he made this, and then it was over. And it's possible Dolly Parton actually made the money. You know, I've never seen The World According to Garp, and I know John Lithgow was in it, because you know why? Because I never liked Robin Williams. I never liked Robin Williams, so I just couldn't have cared. But I'll tell you what I did see. Zapped, maybe the greatest movie of 1982, a Scott Baio, Willie Ames, living legend movie. What is it? Felice Schachter from the Facts of Life. Zapped, where Scott Baio gets powers where he can take off girls' tops. He gets telekinesis. Scatman Crothers, it's just all coming to me now. That is a legendary movie. And of course, Scott Baio, Willie Ames go off to do greatness together with Charles in Charge. You can't put a price on their team-ups. Zapped. Also, An Officer and a Gentleman come out. I mean, this year is incredible. We just had to get to the summer where they just released it all that we know. An Officer and a Gentleman, just watched that the other night again. Totally watchable. Richard Gere's incredible, and usually pretty boring. Louis Gossett Jr., I believe, won the first Oscar as a black guy, win Best Supporting Actor. Obviously, we know the song. And, of course, Night Shift is where Dave Juskow and America gets introduced to Michael Keaton. It's Ron Howard's second movie, I think. Uses Henry Winkler. I fucking love that. I love that he used Henry Winkler in his first or second movie, and that they're friends. And Michael Keaton, oh man. When I was in college, I did a couple of imitations of him. Like, I have them on TV and video, imitating him in Night Shift. And I would say that him in Night Shift, Richard Belzer's in that too, playing a villain, kind of like helped me go to college. Like, in a way, I kept thinking of Michael Keaton. I'm like, what would Michael Keaton in Night Shift, how would he react when you're shy? And you know, this is how I lived my life, taking the characters I saw in the movies and kind of just using them and saying, not what would Jesus do, but what would Michael Keaton do in this, you know, how would he act from this movie? He was incredible in this movie. This made his career. Night Shift is a great movie, completely a competent. Jesus Christ, yesterday, I was walking home from seeing a play, and I was doing a line from the movie, because, God, that's so funny. The line is, they were in jail together. He goes, I wish I were dead. And one of the convicts goes like, you want to be dead? Goes, what? You want to be dead? And he's like, no, it's just a figure of speech. And he goes, well, let me know if you change your mind. And then the guy walks by Michael Keaton and he goes, hi. And Michael Keaton goes, how you doing? I was saying that to myself walking home the other day. I mean, this movie, I know all the lines. and it just meant so much to me.
What are we really talking about here? Huh? What's the essence of what we're talking about? I'll spell it out for you if I have to. Prostitution!
Hmm? What are you kidding, Alex? What is this?
Prostitution. Hey, we can say it. We're big kids now, right? You know, a lot of times it'll help you to understand a word if you break it down, so let's do that now, shall we? Pros doesn't mean anything. Forget about that. Tit, I think we all know what that means. Two, okay, two. Tit. And shun, of course, from the Latin to shun. To say no, uh-uh, thank you anyway, I don't want it. To push away. Doesn't even belong in this word, really. So let's get rid of that. You know, if I can take a moment here, and I mean this, what I'm about to say. I feel a lot of love in this room. I don't know, maybe it's me, but I'll tell you something. I was here a minute ago, and it was really beautiful. So at this moment, I think it's important that I see all of your breasts. Or I don't have to. I don't see the breasts.
You have The Things Are Tough Are Over, which is the Cheech and Chong movie, which I didn't care for. The Last American Virgin, who I never wanted to see because everybody said the kid looked like me in it. So I'm like, yeah, I'm living it. No thanks. Pink Floyd, The Wall. Of course, a classic, but kind of a boring movie. My favorite, The Pirate Movie, because who wouldn't want to see a musical with Christy McNichol? Oh, my God. And that year, on August 13th, my birthday, Fast Times at Ridgemont High comes out, a movie that is going to shape my entire career. Can you even imagine? I'm sitting there watching that movie, and I'm going to meet someday the director of that film as I'm sitting in that movie theater watching this incredible movie. I'm going to meet the director someday or befriend the pizza delivery guy. I mean, seriously, isn't that incredible? It's like my life ain't that great, but that kind of stuff, you know how much I like movies, how much they mean to me, knowing I'm going to meet the pizza guy from Fast Times is pretty cool for me, let alone the director. I mean, that's exciting, but the pizza guy, oh my God, I'm telling you guys, Taylor Negron, if he was alive, you would have met him too. He would be on our podcast. He definitely would have been on the Comedy Cellar show, and everybody would have been psyched for me bringing him there. Major bummer that he's not alive. As you know, he came to my birthday party. I mean, it's just, what a terrific guy. Friday the 13th Part 3 came out that year. It was in 3D, and it sucked. One of my favorite movies of all time, by October, My Favorite Year. That was the number one movie for me on my list for a long period of time until Clueless came over. And I guess I only took it off because I saw it too many times. I think it's up there again now because I just saw it recently again. My Favorite Year, it's actually a Mel Brooks produced film directed by Richard Benjamin, the only decent one he did, and stars Mark Lynn Baker and Peter O'Toole, and it is a masterpiece, a masterpiece. If you're ever interested on how 50s television was working, because I think it's a really good thing. It's also based on a true story of Mel Brooks' depiction of how when Errol Flynn came to be on the Sid Caesar, Your Show of Shows, and he was drunk and he was just there for tax purposes. And it's a really good depiction. Peter O'Toole, I think, was nominated. He was incredible in it. The lines are amazing. The dialogue, the ending's incredible. It makes me cry and tear up. My Favorite Year, was it Lainey Kazan? That guy, the Lou Jacoby is amazing in it. Oh my God. Mr. Swan, now that we've broken bread together, you won't mind if I ask you a personal question. Uncle Morty, what? I know, what am I, a Minska Pinsk? I was born yesterday, I know my way around. Morty, ask your question. That paternity rap a few years back, did you stupor or what? Oh, my God. In fact, I always do Peter O'Toole in that movie all the time when I'm doing, like, you know, the British accent. I'm not an actor. I'm a movie star.
That was the best part.
There is no best part. Swan never made a decent movie in his life.
Sai, that one, Defender of the Crown, is a classic.
Crap.
And so is Captain from Tortuga.
Crap.
And what about Swords of Glory?
Crap.
Amarillo.
Crap.
Sands of the Sudan.
Crap. Benji, you want to see movies? Get a job as an usher. The rest of us are here to write professional show business comedy.
In your case, semi-professional.
What's the matter, Herb? You can't talk to a person like a regular, normal human being?
No.
Oh, my God. Remember, did you any of you see Halloween 3, Season of the Witch? That is one of the scariest movies I've ever seen in my life. I know, it's ridiculous, right? Because what John Carpenter wanted to do is he didn't want to just keep doing Halloween. He had no choice with Halloween 2 because Halloween made so much money. But he was planning on just, no, we're going to have a different story every Halloween. But it bombed, so nobody watched it. But it's terrifying. It's awful, but the premise is so terrifying where this evil guy is making masks for kids to watch, and the mask has a chip in it, so it makes kids' heads snakes. Oh, my God. Thank God I didn't see that as a kid. It would have messed me up. Another movie that nobody knows about that only I know about now is called Jinxed, and it's with Bette Midler, and it's directed by Sam Peckinpah, which is, you know, the guy that does all the westerns and all this stuff, and the guy who actually gets credited with directing was like, no, let's give him a chance. He's the best. And they bring him in to direct a Bette Midler film. Needless to say, they didn't get along very well. It's just so classic. And then, of course, he just, like, left, and they let this, I think his name's Don Siegel, and it was a disaster. Wait a minute. What? Bette Midler and Sam Peckinpah didn't get along? How could that be? I mean, this guy made some of the greatest spaghetti westerns of our time. The most violent movies of all time. The Wild Bunch. I think that's Sam Peckinpah, right? I have to sometimes get him and Sergio Leone mixed up, but I'm pretty sure I have that correct. And then all of a sudden he's like trying to get it work again. He's working with Bette Midler, and somehow they bump heads. What? How could that be? And speaking of bumping heads, the same year National Lampoon's Class Reunion came out. The reason why Movie Madness came out is because that was before and they decided to release it. National Lampoon's Class Reunion, they're still trying to get back to the glory of Animal House. The only reason I bring up Class Reunion, because I never would, is that it was written by John Hughes. And I promise you, he was furious that his name still remained on that fucking script. Look at me, I'm angry for him. They butchered his script. That movie stinks, and he was done. He was just so angry. It almost ruined everything we know about John Hughes because of that. That film could have ruined him, but fortunately he was a machine, so he was able to move on. That's the only reason I bring it up, because no one's seen it. It was supposed to be, you know, their version of a Class Reunion, and they're going to make like an airplane. You know, we're like, let's make fun of airplane movies. We're going to make fun of Class Reunions, and I think it was also a horror film too. So yipes, did not work. Also that year, interestingly, Creepshow came out, which was probably the last movie where Leslie Nielsen. No, because he was an airplane. Also, it's weird because, well, I guess after Airplane, Leslie Nielsen wasn't. No, that's not true because, well, I guess it was 82 where Naked Gun started. So before he went back, he was serious in Creepshow. Like, he wasn't Leslie Nielsen funny. He wasn't Leslie Nielsen like we talk about with the Jets saying you have to learn about Leslie Nielsen and his greatness of comedy. So he's in this movie Creepshow, which was really fun if you were a kid. There were four stories. I don't think they hold up. Ted Danson's in it. I think Stephen King is in it. He's in one of the stories. It's not good. And it's not bad at the same time, but my guess is it does not hold up. Who was the other guy with the cockroaches? Talk to me. Who was that guy? He's kind of a legend. And it's all coming back. I remember. I just remember it not being good, but I must have seen it 100 times just on cable. And I also remember this movie, They Call Me Bruce, which I never saw, but I think the guy in it was Johnny Ho. I think he was a comedian. And the only reason I remember him is because when he was on The Tonight Show, he was a comedian from, I don't know, China, Korea, I don't know, one of those. I know, how racist am I? And he just would come out and be, hurra. And everybody would laugh. Hurra. And nowadays, even he would be considered racist by making that funny. And as we wrap up going into December of 1982, we have some incredible stuff. We are talking about 48 Hours, which, of course, made Eddie Murphy's career. He would have made it somewhere else anyway. He was incredible on Saturday Night Live, so there was no way for him to lose. But to do a real action comedy as his first film was incredible with Nick Nolte. It's a really well done. Was it Walter Hill, I think, is the director? It was incredible and really good. And then, of course, his Trading Places after that just kind of solidifies him and his greatness. I was just watching Dr. Doolittle this morning, which is after he's finished, and he's good. Eddie Murphy, still good. 48 Hours, incredible. The Verdict, which I always remember. Paul Newman, that was a great movie. Is it Sidney Lumet, I think, is the director? Charlotte Rampling, do I have that right? The guy that Warren Beatty always likes using, right? And of course, James Mason. How could I forget? Right. James Mason is like, now, why would you keep a cop? Now, of course, my dear, the kind of law you'd like to practice is important. You're doing a job and a service. And if the kind of law you'd like to practice takes money. Yeah, that's a pretty good movie. Paul Newman's a down-and-out attorney. He's going to like people's funerals to get work and stuff, and he gets this big case, and it's all a setup, and the ending is really great, and they really stick it to James Mason. But, my dear, why would you keep a copy?
I know how you feel. You don't believe me, but I do know. I'm going to tell you something that I learned when I was your age. I prepared a case, and old man White said to me, how did you do? And I said, did my best. And he said, you're not paid to do your best. You're paid to win. And that's what pays for this office. Pays for the pro bono work that we do for the poor. Pays for the type of law that you want to practice. Pays for my whiskey. Pays for your clothes. Pays for the leisure we have to sit back and discuss philosophy as we're doing tonight. We're paid to win the case. You finished your marriage. You wanted to come back and practice the law. You wanted to come back to the world. Welcome back.
So, who wouldn't like that? Gandhi also comes out that year. Never seen it. Couldn't care less. I think that won Best Picture. Obviously, Ben Kingsley won Best Actor. I don't know if it won Best. I think it won Best Picture, but just now I need to see it. Now I need to see it. But if you're a 17-year-old boy, you don't need to see Gandhi in 1982. So unfortunately, you know, Porky's 2 comes out the next year. I'm like not thinking of Gandhi. I'm kidding, of course. But you know, you lose track of these movies sometimes when you're too young to see it. But now, I'd probably like to see it. I wonder if it holds up. Why wouldn't it hold up? Airplane 2 comes out. That blows. Sophie's Choice comes out. I don't want to see that. But what a legendary cultural, you know, thing where people still use that. I'm just going through kind of a Sophie's Choice thing here, you know, as a comic foil. The name Sophie's Choice comes out. That's why it's important. The Toy. Is that the another Richard Pryor made 3 movies that year? The Toy, yeah, it's Richard Pryor and Jackie Gleason. When Jackie Gleason had to come back hard, but with that kid, Scotty Schwartz, who became a porn star. That's all anybody remembers about The Toy. Another really bad Richard Pryor film, and he is just on a real bad trajectory right now. Best Friends, I always remember that. Burt Reynolds and Goldie Hawn. That wasn't horrible. Yeah, that was all right. I remember my sister enjoying that when she was a kid. And The Dark Crystal I've never seen. I think that's a Muppets one, right? Isn't that Jim Henson or is that Disney? Do I have it wrong? Is it with Bowie? I got to see that one. I've been trying to look that up. I think they just made a sequel like last year. Maybe. I don't know. I got to check that out. Tootsie, of course, finishes the year. And Tootsie, obviously, is incredible. Sydney Pollack is not only directs it, it's amazing in the movie. I made the kids watch it. They loved it in 2024 from 1982, even though, you know, I saw the Broadway musical. I just saw David Yazbek's new show. He was the one who created the musical. I saw the musical from start, from Backers, you know, production to the seeing it on Broadway with John Ritter's wife. I mean, it's just like Tootsie's been in my life for so long. And that I've seen recently still completely holds up. With the kids, I wasn't sure, do you even know what a soap opera is? And of course, in the play, they change it to a production of Romeo and Juliet. But yes, Tootsie still holds up, still classic. Dustin Hoffman's incredible. Bill Murray is incredible. And of course, the guy from Police Academy, who is in Punky Brewster, is incredible. Like, Dorothy, I love what you did with our scene today. That guy's incredible. Does Jeff know?
Excuse me. I wonder if you could help me. I'm looking for the Russian tea room.
This is the Russian tea room.
Right here.
You're standing in front of...
Oh, well, my star, so it is. Well, this is very embarrassing.
Yeah, well, this is it.
Thanks very much.
Good afternoon, Mr.
Beale. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. Please sit down.
Thank you.
The waiter will be here in just a minute.
Thank you.
George, how are you?
Thank you, Ronnie. How are you?
Wait a minute.
I'm Helen. I'm awfully lonely. I wondered if you wouldn't mind buying me lunch.
Hold on. You can't come. Gregory, this was...
Stop! George. It's Michael Dorsey,
okay? Your favorite client.
How are you?
Last time you got me a job, it was a tomato.
No. Swear to God.
Michael.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I begged you to get some therapy.
I know, and you also told me that no one would ever hire me again.
Jesus Christ, you think this is going to make a difference?
I got a soap, George. I'm the new woman administrator on Southwest General.
You're what?
Congratulate me. They almost didn't hire me because they thought I looked too feminine.
Something from the bar.
Isn't that amazing?
Please, could you give me a double vodka right away, please?
You know,
for the lady?
Oh, how about a Dubonnet with a twist?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. That's a lovely glass.
Thank you.
Welcome.
You're not going to get away with this.
I got away with it. Look around. Nobody...
I don't believe this.
Why not?
I mean, I believe it. I just don't believe that anybody else is going to
You want to be it?
Don't.
George.
I walk down this...
Hi, Phil.
You know Joel Spector.
Hello, Joel.
How you doing?
How are you?
Hi.
Listen, I talked to Stuart. I talked to him yesterday. He'll be one more week in London, and then he definitely
wants to meet. He's never been that ticklish before. We go back years.
We haven't been introduced.
Joel Spector.
Joel, I'm sorry.
How are you?
Sorry, Phil. This is Michael.
Dorothy Michaels, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
May I say, Mr. Weintraub, that you are the best director, producer on the Broadway scene today.
Thank you, Miss Michaels. Hope to see you again.
Yes, let's have lunch.
Fine.
Call you.
George.
Nice meeting you.
You know, he's very handsome. I think you ought to represent him.
You are psychotic.
No, I'm not. I'm employed. I got the whole world.
Don't make fun of you. Don't get close to me.
So many great lines in that terrific movie. Great music. A great way to end our 1982 year in film on Just Gale in the City. I had a great time, as you can probably tell with my voice and reaction, reliving the movies from 1982 with you. This is our interim show. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you next week on a fresh episode of Just Gale in the City. Good night, everybody.